Sarah Akhil, welcome to the Maz Hakim podcast.
Well, thank you very much.
It's such a pleasure to have you here because I have been to a few of your restaurants and I've had your beautiful cooking. Can you share with us your journey on how your passion for cooking started?
Well, if I'm going to go back 20 years ago, that's going to be long. So I'm just going to give you the headlines of it. I grew up in a Palestinian family with four other sisters. We are five sisters in total. And not just as a big family or just a Palestinian family, but everyone from the Sham region, I think, would agree that we relate food to everything. We use food as a way to express everything. Weddings have a specific dish to serve. Funerals, God forbid, have a specific dish to serve, and everything else. Every other occasion has a specific dish to serve. So we've kind of connected with food and every other occasion in our life, our entire lives. My mom is a great cook. She is a wonderful one. My sisters are not small eaters. sisters. And it's always good to grow up in a family where everyone eats and shares the same passion for food, and everyone expresses loudly when they eat something good or when they eat something that they don't like. So I grew up in that environment, and it made me very close to cooking. In the beginning, it was eating, and then it was curiosity, and I wanted to know more and how to make things. And yes, it tastes great. How was it done? Because I want to have it again. I don't want to have to go all this way or go to my aunt's house or ask my mom every time I want to have something that I really like or enjoy. So it was curiosity as well in how do things happen? How does it turn from a batter to a cake, from a raw meat that is, you know, just gooey and raw to something with three different textures where you have this crunch on the top and it's soft from inside and it's juicy when you eat it. And it was that curiosity, and I wanted to experience, and I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to experience it myself. How does it become that great from raw to that great? And yeah, and then it continued. I went to culinary school.
Where did you go to the culinary school?
The Royal Academy of Culinary Arts, affiliated by Les Roches. So I have 2 degrees from the Royal Academy of Culinary Arts and Les Roches, Switzerland. I have to mention something because I had a very funny conversation with my little sister the other day about exams and failures and academic failures and how people have no chance in life to do anything good professionally if they don't
do well at school.
If they don't do well at school. And while she was talking, just because she had one academic failure in her entire life, she's 25 and she had one academic failure in her entire life, and she panicked and she was crying and saying, "There, I have no future. I have no professional future." And I laughed so hard at the end of it because I was like, wait a minute. Does she remember that I did not pass my last year of high school? Before I went to culinary school. And then I looked at her and I was like, yo, no, you do have a professional
life. You'll be fine. Yeah.
Don't worry. This is not the end just because you did not. You failed one exam in your life.
Exactly.
And that's how you think. And I wanted to mention that because as proud we are of how much we accomplish and degrees that we get, I also need to be proud of not passing my last year in Jordan.
Yeah.
Just because of physics. I mean, I've done everything that I wanted to do since I was 13.
And it's so important for people to remember, you know, to do something they love, to be in their ekagi and their passion, because your passion has now led you to be a Michelin star chef at such a young age. How did that come about?
Well, I don't want to correct you.
Okay, sorry.
But we did get a Bib Gourmand in my run at Filia Dubai.
Yes,
I wouldn't know how it happened because I was surprised myself. What I concluded from that journey at Filia Dubai and at Michelin and everything else. Of course, being on a Michelin stage at 26, receiving an award for a restaurant, is something that I have not even thought it would happen ever. Like, I probably thought I might get one when I'm 40. I've been cooking for enough years to get that thing. But it happened. And what I concluded from everything that we went through after and before is that we focused, the team and I focused really well on what we're doing.
Yes.
And learned from what others have done in the country or in the region or around us or globally, but mm-hmm. we focused on what we're doing. And when it came, we were actually super surprised because we were like, okay, we're invited. We're probably invited because we're a restaurant. It was the first time that Michelin ever came to Dubai. So no one knew what's happening. Yeah. We had an idea, but no one knew. We had assumptions, a million assumptions. Oh, maybe we're invited because we are a restaurant in the UAE. Maybe we're invited because we got an award. Maybe we're invited because we're just on the list, like on the recommended list. But when it happened and we got the Bib Gourmand, we were extremely happy. I mean, the restaurant category fits right in the Bib Gourmand. And,
yes.
But as well, I mean, as I said, it was the first time that we've dealt with Michelin being in the country. So we did not know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it was the joy was just about how much work we've done. How much progress personally and professionally we've gone through,
mm-hmm.
and how much happiness it felt to get recognized by everything that we've done and focused on,
mm-hmm.
and not something that we actually chased because we really did not know we would ever get on that stage. So
it was never on your vision board, or you never really grew up wanting to?
It was a wish list.
Wow.
Of course, everyone who cooks wants to be on the Michelin on the Michelin stage. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to get awarded. Everyone wants to...
You just recognized.
Wouldn't see it coming, right?
Yeah.
And this is the best joy ever. It's when you don't see it coming. I mean, you're happy when you're expecting something.
Yes.
Because you know it's coming, but when it comes, you're just like, oh, yes, finally, it happened. But when you don't see it coming and you don't expect it because you don't know it that well, it's the first year that we've had it. So it was just a bigger joy,
mm-hmm.
because we really did not see it coming. But we've done our best, and salutes to the team who's still there and the salutes to the team who left, and pride. They should be very proud.
Absolutely. If you could cook for someone dead or alive, a celebrity, what would you cook and who would that be for?
Dead or alive? Does it have to be a celebrity?
It could be anyone.
Okay.
Who would you cook for?
Dead or alive, I would cook for my grandmother.
Wow.
She's not a celebrity.
Yes.
But I'm trying to make her one.
Yeah. So she's the best cook.
May her soul rest in peace. She passed away when I was 15. And she's always fed me secretly.
Yes.
After my mom has fed me. And I wish by that time I had the same growth in talent to cook for my grandmother with confidence. I would also try and cook for Anthony Bourdain. He was pretty honest.
Yeah.
He was pretty honest. I would love to cook for a character like Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you cook?
What would I cook?
Yes.
Well, for my grandmother, I would make a rice pudding and I would get her honest feedback because she did not like everything.
she was
a picky eater. So... for Anthony, oh my God, I never thought of it. What would I cook for Anthony? I'd just make him a gnocchi.
Oh.
A gnocchi or a stuffed pasta.
Yes. Love it.
Yeah.
I've had one of your pastas before. It's delicious.
I always say, if I'm not doing this, I don't know what else would I be doing life. So
describe a typical day in the kitchen. What happens when you step into the kitchen?
I chew on something, the first thing I do is like I take something up in my mouth.
Really?
I eat something. And then I check on everything that's been done if I wasn't there and everything that we need to do. And then I start going through the logistics. I mean, I know a chef's life sounds pretty exciting from the minute you walk into the restaurant to the minute you leave. Mm-hmm. And it is a very fun job.
Yes.
But we also have to do a lot of boring work at a computer and sit on a desk for 3 hours at least a day to finalize, to just do the logistics
menu
behind the restaurant, right?
Right.
Like orderings and scheduling and having people in the right place, in the right time, the food, and all goes together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then one of the best times of being in the restaurant is when we start service. It is pretty good because I get to speak to people, because
yes,
I get to go out and connect with guests and ask them about the food, because sometimes you would think the food is great and it could be even better than you thought, and
mm-hmm,
sometimes it could be just like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
maybe you're just obsessed with cheese.
Yeah. More cheese.
Yeah, maybe you're just obsessed with cheese, but yeah. I think officially my best moments are the moments I spend with the kitchen and the service team when the doors are locked and absolutely no one can see us.
Yes.
And when I can get to speak to guests,
mm-hmm,
and talk to them and connect and make new friends and make new family members and make new just grow it. Just make restaurants and the dining room part of the community and not,
mm-hmm,
try to force it into the community. So just make it feel like your space. Hosting. I like to play host.
I love it. I love hosting too. It's the best. How do you handle the pressure of being in a kitchen? And is it like what we see, for example, on like Gordon Ramsay or like Jamie Oliver? I mean, not that crazy, but how do you handle the pressure?
You learn how to handle the pressure. You have to be realistic. I feel like, first of all, thank you very much for giving me a platform where people,
yes,
where thousands of people can hear it. And it's important for them to know. It's important for people who listen to other chefs and listen to other people in other industries to be,
mm-hmm,
realistic. You were not born ready to do this. You were not born ready to know how to deal with the pressure or mistakes or emergencies or things that happen,
yes,
all over. It's something that you learn. It's something that becomes part of your habits and,
mm-hmm,
and your character and how you deal with things and who you are. And it's not something that you are born with. So in the beginning, you would not know how to handle pressure. In the beginning, you would react wrong and you would have to go back and say, I'm sorry. And you would react maybe not wrong, but maybe not in the right way to
yeah,
fix a problem or to deal with the pressure. And you have to reflect and learn from it. And then with time, you start realizing what's the worst that can happen. And you start acting according to that, right? Because,
mm-hmm,
I guess complained, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to have to go out and say we're sorry.
Yes.
But it's not the end of the world. We don't have to kill anyone over it. So
exactly.
That's it.
Nobody does.
Yeah, nobody does. No one has to suffer from anything. And,
yes,
and the space doesn't have to suffer and the energy doesn't have to get affected, because you never have just one guest in your restaurant.
Yes.
You always have plenty, and you can't let that 1% mistake affect all the 99% good things that are happening. Otherwise, you just get an entire failure.
Yeah.
And I would always say, up to 20% failure, you are still on the winning side. So
yes,
everything can be fixed. But yeah, I was not born ready to deal with pressure. I had to learn it. So.
Yeah. I watched a movie called The Menu. Have you seen it? It's basically about a chef who's very particular, and he gets very... actually, in the movie, he kills everyone at the end because they don't like
it.
His food.
I watched it and I was like, okay.
Yeah. How did you feel watching something like that? And how does it feel like if you do get, like, I don't know, negative feedback from a dish? Because after watching this movie, I was like, oh my gosh, I should really thank every chef, because I appreciate, you know, the food at my table, but sometimes you forget to go out and say, you know, can I speak to the chef or thank the chef?
I think appreciation can be done in so many different ways in a restaurant. It doesn't have to be that you call anyone personally and say thank you. You could say thank you to whoever is dealing with you.
Yes, right.
It was a funny movie. It was horrifying. Yes. Right? It was a funny movie. I think up until people started getting killed, I was watching with chefs, actually. And we laughed so hard because we could relate to every character sitting on the tables.
Yes.
The ones who think they're food critique, the ones who think they're foodies, you know, yeah. who know Packaget, and it makes them experts. And people who just want you to serve food to them because they're entitled. And
yes.
There are so many characters that you could relate to. And it was funny because we were sitting there and every time that a character popped out and we were like,
we know that person.
We know that one. So, yeah, that was an extreme movie. That was an extreme reaction. But yes, I do think somehow feedback and gratitude could be done in nicer ways. And to understand, to put yourself in anyone's shoes is always very important.
Yeah.
Not to hate someone because they're too busy and they couldn't go out in the dining room, or they couldn't speak to you, or they couldn't bring you into the kitchen is okay sometimes, because sometimes internally a lot of things happen that you can't understand and you can't relate to, and you would think they're silly, but they're not.
Yeah.
Having no tomato sauce while you have 3 dishes that has tomato sauce on the menu might sound ridiculous to you, but it could sound like a disaster to us.
Right.
So it's just that, be kinder. Be not even kinder. Be a bit more logical.
Yes.
And constructive when you give feedback and when you talk to people who work in the industry. Because after all, it is a customer service industry that we work at. And customer service means that you had to deal with one person in the restaurant or two. Mm-hmm. Maximum 3 people at the restaurant when you go there, and they've had to deal with at least 200 on that night.
Yes.
So imagine how that would feel.
Wow.
If 50 of the 200 came and gave them a hard time.
Hard time.
I mean, you get one person to just, you know, to upset you in the morning or during the day, and you have the worst day. You decide to have 5 or 6 hours of the day that your mood is not good. Mm-hmm. So imagine having at least 50 of the 200 who talk to you in a way that is unpleasant.
So what would be your advice if someone goes to a restaurant now and they want to give feedback? What would be the best way to go about it?
Ask yourself 2 questions before you give feedback. Did I not like it because it was not done properly? Or is it because it's my personal taste?
Mm-hmm.
Second, do I know how it's supposed to be done?
Yes.
And then if you have the answers to these, then give a feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If it's no to either, then
keep it to yourself. tell me about some kitchen disasters. I love watching these shows. But have you had any kitchen disasters that you can talk about that have been memorable?
I was talking about when a few days ago, one time in one of our kitchens, you know how usually electricity and gas are connected?
Yes. Yeah.
So when there's a fire alarm, everything goes down. That's it. Everything goes off, and that's it. You can't use any of them. And one day in one of the kitchens that I worked at, the electricity went off, but the gas was still on.
Oh gosh!
And so all the cooking was still happening, but there was no light. And then we had to pause for a second, and then we looked at each other and we were like, okay, usually when this happens, we have to stop. Like, we stop by default because there's nothing to work with.
Yeah.
But there's no light and there's still gas and people are sitting outside. Should we just
keep going?
Go ahead and keep cooking, or should we not? And eventually we just kept cooking. And
whoa.
Yeah.
With candles.
Not sure it was the right decision. Yeah. But but we kept going. And
yeah.
And we cooked, yeah. We cooked our way through the night. It took a while, actually, for the electricity to come back. It
was, yes.
I'm not sure it was the safest choice to make, but...
It just shows your passion, you know.
The show must go on.
Yeah, the show must go on. We know that in radio, too.
Yeah.
Can you share a secret ingredient that you use or a cooking technique that you use or you would recommend?
A secret ingredient. Well, it's not really a secret ingredient, but I do think olive oil makes everything better.
Yes.
It's my favorite ingredient, personally. And zests.
Zest.
Someone who once hired me. I'm going to send him this when we get... told me one day after a tasting, you know, I know what to get you on your birthday. I'm just going to get you a box of citrus zests because you just love using them everywhere.
Yeah.
He was mocking me. But right. It's very true. It's very true. I like adding zest, and I would say it's the perfume. It's a perfume to any lady, to any person in
yes.
life, you know, when you just put some perfume and you go out and here we go, you feel like you've done something better and everything is just in one piece in you, right? I look
yes.
good, I smell good, and I feel good, and I go out. And zest give me that feeling when I put them on a plate. They just kind of bond everything together, all the ingredients together, when they are in the right place. I mean, I wouldn't zest a steak, but
yes.
when they are in the right place, they just bond all the ingredients together, and they give that kick that is just fantastic.
That's quite Italian, right? Zest. They put a lot of zest, like lemon...
Well, it's Mediterranean in general.
Yes, right.
Say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you had a fan moment with any sort of chef? A chef that you've had a fan moment with where you've met them and you've been like, you know, a celebrity restaurant or something and you're like, you know, I've had a fan moment with a celebrity chef at a celebrity restaurant.
Me fanning on that.
Yeah,
yeah, of
fan.
Course. I'm a big fan of someone that I worked for before I worked for and
right.
after during working for, and right now I'm still a big fan. I've worked for Massimo Bottura in Dubai
yes.
on the Palm. We've done the pre-opening with fantastic head chef Udora Salat as well, Bernardo, for the restaurant, and then we closed during the pandemic because of the pandemic. So, and he's been one of my industry role models and since I was probably 17.
Wow.
When I had the chance to work with him, I just jumped right into it. I did not really think twice before I say yes. And yeah, I've met one of the heroes and now I'm still a big fan of him. So.
Yes. What does that feel like working with somebody that you've watched cook or you're such a fan of?
It's overwhelming.
Pressure.
Believe it or not, I cried the first time Massimo Bottura walked into the restaurant. I cried of excitement.
That's so cute.
Yeah, and yeah, Bernardo laughed at me. Yeah. he was like, okay, what's happening? But okay, take a moment and then you can go out. I was like, okay.
Oh, that's beautiful. So, yeah. All the emotions. What's a cooking technique that you think everyone should know?
A cooking technique that everyone should know.
Or that you use and you think is special.
Ah, that's tough. Everyone should know? I mean, how to create an emulsion, I think, I would say. Because
right.
it saves you a lot of time of using fat and things that you don't want to use.
Yes.
I think we should teach people how to do that.
What is it? In sorry, plastic. I don't know the lingo.
It's when you mix water and oil, technically. But
oh.
they mix and they become a sauce, a thick sauce, without adding anything to them.
So you mix water and oil?
Yeah, something water, like a liquid and oil, any liquid and oil. You mix them and they create some kind of a viscous sauce.
Yes.
That you can use. Like, you have it with the pasta. Usually you see it in the pasta vongole,
yes,
because it doesn't have any sauce, but it mm-hmm. has the clams, water, and the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And they create this kind of viscous or thick sauce that
yes.
doesn't have any butter or cream in it. And it's a great thing because it just keeps everything fresh.
Uh-huh.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, wow, I love that. And what is one food trend that you think is overrated?
Vodka sauce pasta.
Okay. Wow, I don't think I've ever had that. Maybe I skip it on the menu.
Please do. It's a pink sauce pasta, but
yes.
I'm not fond of it.
You're not a big fan. What about one food that you think is underrated?
Underrated? Ooh, we have this grain in the Middle East called frike.
Yes.
It's the green wheat. And I think it has the most earthy flavor any grain ever had in life.
Yes.
And it's just... by nature, you don't have to manipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
It has a great texture when you cook it. It has a great flavor. It has a great bite into it. It looks great. It feels great when you eat it, and it's so healthy, and it's so fulfilling. It just yes. fulfills all your senses when you eat it, and it's a very underrated grain because not everyone knows what it is or how to cook it. But we cook it a lot in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
We make it with soup, or we make it like rice, like a risotto, and we eat it with vegetables and. So it's a beautiful grain, and I think it's very underrated. It's mm-hmm. my favorite, one of my favorite dishes to eat in the Middle East. Actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that. I love frike. I think it digests very well as well. It's quite healthy
yeah.
and light.
It's beautiful.
Can you give us a quick and easy cooking tip or trick that we could use at home?
An easy cooking tip.
To really elevate our dishes.
Yeah, try zesting.
Zesting, yes.
Try zesting. Always season well.
Yes.
Sometimes we take seasoning for granted just because we're cooking at home and we have the salt at our hands and
yes.
just throw it in there if we need it. But great seasoning elevates a dish a lot.
Yes.
Zests are great as well. What's a cooking tip that I would give you? I've seen a lot of people who cook at home and they boil their meat or chicken.
Mm-hmm. Is that not?
And that's how they cook it.
Yes.
And I would just suggest maybe pan sear it, give it a nice color, and just put it in the oven.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and just don't boil it.
Don't boil
the only
it. Is that
thing to boil is bones.
Yeah.
Just don't boil it. That's another one that I really care about, and I really see people doing it all the time. So
you're like, stay away from that. Don't boil it.
Stop boiling your meat, please. it's not a good way. This is not how you get the best out of it.
What's your favorite spice then?
Spice. Do I have a favorite spice? I don't think I ever thought of my favorite spice.
The one that you love using a lot. See, the thing is, I know spices are a bit tricky, right? Because different
yeah.
things, you know. Like, I use turmeric a lot, but I know that you're not meant to use it in everything.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay, here's a funny thing. Have you ever used pink peppers?
No.
So pepper is a spice, right?
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
pink peppers have this berry flavor at the end of it mm-hmm. when you use it. And it became my favorite spice because right now I'm opening a restaurant in Jordan.
Yes.
And we have a beautiful pink pepper tree. And I'm trying to use it as much as possible because mm-hmm. we have the tree, so why not?
Yes.
And it's right at the balcony of the kitchen. So you can just grab your pink peppers and... dry them and crush them and use them. It gives a beautiful look if you make a nice cacio e pepe.
Mm-hmm.
Just put the pink pepper on top and it's just a great finishing to it.
Yes.
It's an interesting ingredient. I don't use many spices. I use more herbs in my food.
Herbs, yes.
But yeah, pink pepper is definitely at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
It's underrated too.
Yeah. Tell us about your new restaurant.
So I am opening a beautiful restaurant in Jordan, which is back home in Amman.
Yes.
And it's my first project in Amman, which is where we live. The restaurant has, so me and my partners, Lana Alamat and Mahrem Asher, mm-hmm. have are crazy about food and wine in general. So the restaurant is going to have a beautiful wine cellars with with vineyards and wines from different places and small winemakers, things that Jordan did not explore yet, because you want to spread the culture of wine and educate people a bit more about how they make it and
mm-hmm.
and where it comes from and what's good for you and what's worth the effort and money and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
With a world map and sommeliers working in the cellar, and you just go through the cellar to Dara Dining by Sari Aqil, which is the restaurant.
Wow.
And the restaurant is in a family house that we took, we are renting since end of last year to renovate as a restaurant.
Yes.
And it has a beautiful back like garden that we're going to sit everyone in the garden.
Wow.
We're going to close it in winter, but during summer, and now summer is a beautiful season in Jordan.
Yes.
And it has the beautiful garden has a lot of trees. The mom who lived there, because it was a family house, as I said,
mm-hmm.
Actually, it's my friend's family house.
Oh, wow. Yes. And they moved out of there.
Yes. So the mom who lived there, their mom used to be a florist and a gardener.
Mm-hmm.
So we have beautiful trees that she left for us, and
wow.
and I just appreciate them so much because we will integrate everything that we have in that house into
yes.
our food. So we have the grapefruit, the oranges, the generic, the pink pepper, the milberry. We have basils, mints, and lots of things growing in the garden that we are going
yes.
to use.
Mm-hmm.
The restaurant will be Mediterranean with a heavy influence of Italian
mm-hmm.
because we're going to have our signature pizzas, our homemade pastas. And most importantly about this restaurant is that I'm doing something that I really wanted to do since a very long time. And since them and I started talking probably in September or October,
mm-hmm.
and we've been talking about this, we are sourcing everything locally.
Wow.
The only things that we are not getting locally are probably seafood, because we're not very well known for seafood in Jordan. But everything that we are doing in the restaurant is to have the community building the restaurant with us.
Wow.
And not having the restaurant trying to fit in the community that we're at.
Mm-hmm.
So our plates are handmade in Jordan by strong and beautiful ladies in Jordan, in Iraq al-Amir. We designed and then we went to them and we just decided to do all the plates there.
Wow.
Our ingredients, vegetables and fruits are all locally sourced. Our cheeses are made in Jordan by a woman in Jordan who has a small business of making cheese, and she's a cheese maker. She has such a personality of a cheese maker. And it's so odd because you go to Jordan, you're like, there are cheese makers in Jordan.
Yeah.
So we have Taimur who's making some of our cheeses, and we have Nasreen who's making the other some, and they are fantastic cheeses. When I tried them, I almost did not believe that they made them until I went to their farms and houses.
Wow.
And I've seen them happening. Yeah, and we are using a lot of ingredients that the region is familiar and nostalgic with,
yeah.
the Sham region,
mm-hmm.
but we're using it in different ways. I do not want to ever take one of our dishes and say, oh, I'm going to elevate our dishes. I'm going to elevate ma'lube, and I'm going to elevate
yeah.
mjaddara, and I'm going to elevate mtabbad, and I don't want to do that. I think
yes.
they're beautiful the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them.
Keep them as is.
Keep those dishes as beautiful as they are.
Yes.
And I want to work with ingredients that we are familiar with,
mm-hmm.
like miftul, like za'atar, like but just do different dishes with them.
Yes.
I want to keep our dishes in my head and in my memories and in my stomach the way they are.
Yeah.
And I want to use our ingredients that we all know and familiar with, mm-hmm. To create new dishes and to use seasonal produce. We are not planning our menus according to what we would like to have next month.
Yes.
We are planning it according to what can we do next month?
Mm-hmm.
What's growing? And what can we do next month and next season and the season after? And that's how we're planning the menus.
Mm-hmm.
The team is all as well, Palestinians and Jordanians.
Wow.
We are sourcing a few wines and ingredients from Palestine as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we just want to highlight the seasonality and produce and the great quality of things that are happening in Jordan,
mm-hmm.
Our way. You know,
beautiful.
That's what we can do. That's what we can do best to put Amman. Amman is already now on the culinary map, as we were talking before we start this.
Yeah.
But we wanna make it even stronger because we do have great produce, we do have great talent, and we do have great seasonality. We go through four seasons just properly.
Yeah.
And a lot of things grow in Amman that people don't even know outside Amman. So we want to use that.
Yeah.
And we want to showcase what we have in Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, using our talented teams who are from Jordan as well.
What's the name of the restaurant?
So the seller is called Dara. Okay. The restaurant is called Dara Dining by Saira Aqil.
Okay.
Yes.
It's so beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I can't wait
to visit Amman and try your beautiful... It honestly sounds just like a dream.
Well, if you are there in July, yes. We are opening on the 2nd of July.
All right.
And you are more than welcome. I would love to host you and to have you there.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's such an absolute pleasure. And Chef Sarah, if someone wants to try your cooking in Dubai, where can they go?
Well, right now I am at La Table in DIFC. Mm-hmm. La Table du Saira Aqil. I really hope I just said it right.
Yeah.
I'm not good in speaking French. I've been trying to learn it. Yeah. To learn how to say the name of the restaurant I'm at now.
You're right. Everything sounds better in French though.
Yeah. Yes. And the theme of the restaurant is La Plage. I really hope I said that correctly
good.
As well.
Yeah.
The beach. So we're doing kind of a simple trattoria, Italian trattoria. Food and
yes.
It has some of my signatures and it has things that we made only for La Table, mm-hmm. like the Jerusalem artichoke lasagna with taleggio cheese, like the cacio e pepe there that is very special, and we have the Palestinian stracciatella sandwich because the restaurant has an influence of my Palestinian roots,
mm-hmm.
and we're using a beautiful piece of bread that is made by a Palestinian called Dalia, and it's made of mainly olive oil. And we put some stracciatella inside, some brisaola, pickled onions, arugula, and you just bite into it while it's warm and cold and it has all these textures together.
Beautiful.
And just the crunch of the onion and the freshness of everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a freshness party in your mouth.
I have been to the restaurant. It's such a perfect location. The food is insane. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
And the Palestinian dish was my favorite. What was it? It had, I think, za'atar in it, chicken.
It has brisaola.
Brisaola, that's
za'atar
it.
And stracciatella.
Yes.
My favorite dish as well.
Yeah. Where can we follow you and your journey and your culinary journey and your life?
I do have an Instagram that I never remember the handle.
Yeah.
But I can just read it now out loud. I do come out as I am good in social media.
I am
not.
Okay.
So, I mean, writing my handle that way is not very helpful. It's chef_sara.akal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Such an absolute pleasure, beautiful Sarah, and wish you all the very best of success with your new restaurant and your beautiful culinary journey.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for giving me the platform, and I look forward to see you in Amman.
Yes, absolutely.